This podcast is brought to you by iGel. iGel offers the next generation edge operating system designed for simple, secure, and high performance access to virtual desktops and cloud workspaces. Easy to implement and straightforward to operate.
At the third stroke, it will be.
Hello and welcome to EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. In today's show, we'll be talking about Windows Virtual Desktop. But before we dive into all WVD related details, please allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Jitse Langerdijk and I'm your host for this episode. And with me is...
Kees Bocherman.
Hi Kees, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. It's just returned from a short week in Orlando, US for Citrix Summit, and I'm excited to record this podcast today.
Yeah, but not so much about Citrix today, right? Windows Virtual Desktop it is. So.
Windows Virtual Desktops, yes.
So, great, but what did you find out about our special guest for today?
Well, our guest is an interesting person. We found some really funny facts, to be honest. So, did you know that this guest runs all of his workloads out of Japan just because he can?
Really?
Yes. And his evangelizing work brings him to all different places around the globe. But when he's not traveling, he spends his days in a church.
That's interesting. Oh, we're asking about this. So, well, if you still don't know who our guest is today, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So, my name is Freek Bresson. I'm, like you guys, from the Netherlands. Thank you for that interesting introduction. It's some fun facts you got there gathered. So, I work for a company called Wartel. We are a system integrator, cloud integrator company. And we focus on the Microsoft platform in general. We do that in a lot of different teams. So we're working on the modern workplace, data and AI, security, and a lot of other stuff as well. And my area of focus is anything that's related to the end user computing stuff. So I guess I'm on the right podcast today. And more specifically, I focus on anything that's related to remoting Windows. So doing anything from application and desktop publishing to an end user is what I enjoy doing. From an architectural standpoint, as well as infrastructure, consultancy, implementations. I still like to do technical stuff as well. And also involved in various communities. Like you mentioned, I enjoy speaking at conferences around the world. Sharing knowledge by writing articles and blog posts is what I enjoy doing besides my work. So
great. Yeah. So
and now we're pulling you into a podcast as well.
Yeah, how did that happen?
So yeah, and before we dive into everything Windows Virtual Desktop related, we would like to mention Gurami. Thank you for sponsoring this awesome studio microphones that brings our voices to you today. Thank you for listening, of course. And we also want to say thank you to Arrow and Edwin Hilario in particular for providing us the office space to record the show. So thank you both very much. And don't forget
to mention the coffee, because we're driving on coffee right now. So thank you for the coffee as well.
Thank you. Yeah, awesome coffee. It's always good to... it's a Monday morning when we're recording this, right? Is it the Blue Monday already?
Or it is the Blue Monday.
It's the Blue Monday, right?
It is. So, yep.
Well, you're wearing a blue shirt, a blue hoodie, and I'm wearing a black t-shirt.
Why are you wearing a black t-shirt?
Yeah,
didn't you get the memo?
No. I don't read any memos. No. So today's podcast is all about Windows Virtual Desktop. So can you please explain to our listeners what is WVD all about?
Sure. So Windows Virtual Desktop, it's all about publishing applications and desktops to an end user. And when you think about that, that's not new, right? We've all been in this space for many years. Publishing an application and desktop using a remoting protocol, that's not new at all. What does make it new is that this is a service that's running on a public cloud. But even that is not new. We've been doing remote desktop services and other environments on public clouds as well for many years. So what makes the WVD interesting is that this is a transformation from a IaaS perspective, so infrastructure as a service, towards a more platform as a service model. So instead of having to host and run various virtual machines with all of the RDS infrastructure roles on top of it, we're now leveraging that as part of the Windows Virtual Desktop service, hosted by Microsoft. So that really makes it different. And so There's a couple of other benefits. I think we'll talk about those in a bit as well. But the Windows Virtual Desktop service itself, it didn't just fall out of the sky, right? It evolved from various proof of concepts, various technical previews that were before it even was called Windows Virtual Desktop. It was called RDMI. Remote desktop model infrastructure. You might remember that.
We remember that one.
I've heard about that once or twice.
Yes. So you probably heard me speak about that as well. But RDMI was the first step by Microsoft making a platform as a service model. So in this phase, they transitioned the infrastructure roles from an IaaS perspective towards platform as a service. But in that first setup, the infrastructure roles were still part of your Azure subscription. So you had to run these services, these .NET services within your own Azure subscription. You still needed to do a lot of management and maintaining these roles to make sure they're running and they're load balanced, etc.
So you're using more or less like building blocks your Azure subscription to build the entire solution yourself.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So and Microsoft gathered a lot of feedback about those previews, including many feedback from the MVP community, which I'm part of as well. And the overall feedback was, this is a great solution, a great setup. But what if we are not hosting these services ourselves, but you, Microsoft, are hosting these for us as part of a new PaaS service? And that's how Windows Virtual Desktop evolved into what we know it is today.
Because in the end, it's all about delivering functionality to an end user, just the applications or safe access to data. And it's not about configuring an entire backplane just to... Well, to provide access to these applications, right? It's more like consumerization of a desktop and application platform.
It's all about the consumption model.
It is, yeah, and it allows you to really focus on the end user experience and the end user performance instead of all of the infrastructure roles that are now being managed for you as part of the Windows Virtual Desktop service.
Yep. So for you guys, it's basically a shift from keeping the lights on, keeping the infrastructure up and running versus sitting next to an end user and making sure that that application or that service that they're consuming is working in an optimal state.
Yeah. Besides all the other benefits that we're talking about as well, it's really all about saving a lot of management overhead and management costs and be able to, you're not focusing on keeping the infrastructure running, like you said, and load balancing it and making sure you have backups and the latest patches, for example, the RD Gateway patch that came out last week. You don't have to worry about that anymore. You can really focus on the end user experience and making sure that that is optimal and a good fit for the end user.
So with the general availability of Windows Virtual Desktops, and I think it's since October 2019, how's that been for you? I mean, you've seen the birth of a new service by Microsoft with the feedback you were able to give from the MVP community. And I guess your role at your current employer gives you a head start on those projects as well. How's that been for you seeing this come to life?
Yeah, the demand for this service has been huge. So I've been working right now. I think I'm working with 15 or 20 different customers who are looking at the WVD service in one way or another. So I'm doing various proof concepts, but also running a couple of production environments in the meantime. So right after the announcement of general availability, there was a huge demand. But even before that, I have a couple of customers who said, I don't care about GA. Let's go in production with this service because we have a current environment that we need to move out to, or we have an on-prem environment where the hosting facility is going to stop with our contract. So we need to move to the cloud, and this is our next step. So yeah, the demand has been really big. Yep.
And also the adoption, is it easy for organizations to adopt and also to transist from
current platform to this new service?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a couple of migration scenarios available with it depending on the use case, of course. If you're moving from a full desktop, published full desktop towards a full desktop within WVD, it's probably an easy concept. If you're moving from a full client locally towards a remote app, for example, you'll need some extra user adoption, mostly on the user side. But yeah, right now, although the service is feature ready, announced in September, this is an ongoing service. So they're constantly improving the service as they go, adding new features, adding new capabilities. So if you're deploying WVD right now, there's still a lot of hoops you need to jump through to get this working. So you need to set up a consent. You need to do PowerShell scripts to be able to get it running. You need to some ARM templates or Azure templates from the marketplace. So there's a lot of things, different things in different places you need to set up to get this running, which is why that I think is that it's good for organizations to hook up with a partner and help them get a proof of concept or production environment running.
Right. That's the reason why you have value-added partners as
well,
right?
Yeah, that's my job. Yeah.
So with all the feedback you've been given to the Microsoft team to get the product or the service even better, is there one feature that you've recommended or one workflow that you've recommended that actually made the product? Is there something that
Do you recognize some some ideas out of the community that's now as a feature implemented in WVD?
Yeah, I think that overall Microsoft as a company really changed in terms of gathering feedback and changing their product in terms of feedback that they gather. So not sure if I can think of a specific feature, but if you take a look at the way they're gathering feedback using the user voice pages and using the MVP communities, they really started to listen. And that's really different than comparing that to 5, 6, 7 years ago, where the general comment was, yeah, that's good feedback. And then the discussion ended.
Yeah, thank you. It's noted.
Don't call us.
Yeah, don't call us. We'll call you. Thank you for your feedback. But they have really started to listen to what you're actually saying. And a lot of stuff is also community built. So not only the WVD service itself, but a lot of people are also building community tools to manage WVD itself. But also the official eco partner systems, the ecosystem partners itself, who are joining to expand the feature set of WVD. So if you take a look at printing, for example, or management, a lot of partners who build solutions on top of WVD to make the service complete for specific use cases or specific features.
Okay, but does this also create some additional challenges, or do these third-party providers also integrate with a billing system, for example, or a reporting functionality? Or is it still that you need to build a fully enterprise-ready WVD environment with different building blocks from different providers, or...
Yeah, I think that's that depends on what you think is enterprise-ready. It really depends on the organization as well. For now, I think that if you take a look at most of the ecosystem partners, they are delivering a solution on top of WVD. So you purchase a quote-unquote purchase WVD license, which is not really a license, but it's part of the Windows license nowadays. And if you need additional management, you could go take a look at partners like CloudJumper, who have an extended management UI on top of it. If you need additional printing features, you can take a look at ThinPrint or Thrice-Red to be able to add additional printing, depending on your needs. And I think that eventually these partners will closely integrate with the WVD service itself, so that you don't have to purchase separate products, but have them, well, maybe as a checkbox in the marketplace when you're deploying WVD as a service.
Yeah, that would make absolute sense if we're talking about consuming a service, right?
Absolutely.
As far as I can tell, there's a readiness program as well for partners. So if there's a third-party product, you can just is maybe a little bit condescending, but you can follow that partner readiness program and be in that marketplace and be available as being Windows Virtual Desktop ready.
Yep.
So that being said, we already talked about what Windows Virtual Desktop has to offer. Can you tell us a little bit on how the Windows Virtual Desktop stands out? How is it special compared to maybe other platforms that are available in the market?
I think that we already talked about the transition from PaaS from IaaS to PaaS, right? That's a big part of the WVD service. But also this WVD service is integrated into Azure Active Directory. So if you're familiar with previous environments, RDS, terminal services, whether you hosted that on-prem or in Azure, these were all based on Active Directory. So if you wanted to integrate things like MFA, you could do that. There are articles to do that. I wrote some of those articles. it's really complex to be able to set that up in an IaaS environment. For WVD, it's Azure AD out of the box. So you can instantly leverage things like conditional access, Azure MFA, and all of the other benefits that come with Azure AD as well. And this setup is also fully multi-tenant. So if you are an ISV or a hosting provider, you have a specific application that you want to publish to different customers, you can set up a full multi-tenant environment, including role-based access control, to allow you to control the environment, but still also provide some of the admin privileges to your customers as well, which is something that you could not do with previous RDS deployments. And I think that Windows 10 multi-session is probably also one of the big things behind WVD. So this is the first client operating system allowing you to log on with multiple users at the same time. Well, I should say the first legal option to do that, because I think it has been available since Windows XP probably. But this allows you to have a client operating system as the session host. And that's interesting because now you suddenly have the same version of the client that you have locally as well as in the session host server. So there's less need to repackage your applications or retest your applications. I'm not saying that every application that runs on Windows 10 also runs on Windows 10 multi-session. Don't get me wrong. You still need to do the testing, but it makes life easier also because there are still many third-party application vendors who say our application does not run on Windows Server. And client makes that a little easier. But also the user gets the full Windows 10 experience that he's used to. So including Edge and including all of the modern apps. And the entire Windows 10 look and feel is provided to him.
And I guess from a licensing perspective, makes things easier as well, especially if you're talking about these hosting providers, especially if you look at Windows Server licensing model. Yep. This just changes things a little bit around.
It does, and also removes the need for the RDS client access license, which is also a big thing, a big cost for any RDS deployment is still having to use the RDS CAL. That need is also removed by using the client OS for this purpose. So I really think that Windows 10 multi-session will be the session host OS of the future. Yep.
And it helps in adoption as well, right? As you mentioned,
yep.
Well, people recognize it. They're familiarized already with the UI and all yep. that kind of stuff. So you talked a little bit about different types of customers. But is there a certain vertical or a certain, to generalize and type of organization that is the sweet spot for the first successful WVD implementations or?
I don't think it's really meant for a specific vertical or type of organization. I think that you always have the customers, at least I run into various customers who are running an outdated Citrix deployment because their partner or themselves, they never updated it. I run into ZenApp 6 environments running on 2008, and they need to move to a new platform. And they need to decide on, purchase an entire new Citrix platform on-prem with all of the additional costs and licensing, or should we take a look at some of the cloud options as well? But also existing customers. I think that, for example, the existing customers who are right now running RDS on Azure IaaS, they will probably be the first ones who are moving to the service because they, for them, it's really an easy step. They are already in the cloud. Their backend is already in the cloud. They are already familiar with some of the Azure capabilities. So for them, it's really easy step to get those cost savings in there and start managing the full cloud service. But I think that overall, there are two different types of workloads that you can run on the WVD service. One is where an organization wants to move to the modern workplace. And by modern workplace, I mean a Windows 10 device, Azure AD joined, managed by Intune, and as much SaaS and web applications as they can. All of these organizations still have some traditional Windows applications that they need to provide on this modern workplace as well. So they use the remote app technology within WVD to complete that modern workplace story. And actually integrate the remote apps into the local start menu for the user to be able to access all of their applications from the local desktop. There's one scenario where I think that although the service is called Windows Virtual Desktop, sometimes it's confusing. Yes, it can still do remote app. But I think the other scenario is really the full desktop scenario. So if you are a customer who is not really looking to move to the modern workplace, who is using thin clients as their primary client, and needing to provide a full desktop with the full Windows 10 experience, definitely something I would recommend to look at.
So you mentioned Citrix, and yes, we are recording this this podcast in 2020. You talked about old versions, but can you tell us a little bit about partners who are also leveraging all the capabilities of WVD, like Citrix or VMware, or maybe others? Can you tell us a little bit about this or?
Yeah, so we talked about the ecosystems partners before. So I think there are two types of ecosystem partners. One type is the one we talked about before, where the customers are, the partners are extending on the WVD product. So making the management better, or making the printing better, or making the overall use experience better. And then there are two partners who stand out who not so much improve the WVD service, but also replace it with some of their own components. So Citrix Cloud and the VMware proposition, they sort of integrate with Windows Virtual Desktop. I think that the communication around that has been a little bit vague, where in the beginning they said, we are integrating with Windows Virtual Desktop, but they were only publishing Windows 10 multi-session. I think that those integrations are becoming better. So in the end, I think that a customer can look at the feature set of Windows Virtual Desktop to see how many features they can fill in using the native WVD service. And if they need additional features, they can look at some of the smaller, quote-unquote, smaller ecosystem partners who extend upon the service itself. And if that's not enough, obviously the bigger enterprises probably need more management and more capabilities. And they can take a look at integrations by Citrix and by VMware, who not so much extend on the WVD service, but replace it with some of their own components as well.
And take advantage of that Windows 10 multi-user.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the one thing, because Windows Virtual Desktop, our Windows 10 multi-session, you cannot run that outside of the Windows Virtual Desktop service. So you cannot run that on-prem. Well, you can in the meantime, because they announced a hybrid construction, but you cannot host it outside of WVD.
The hybrid construction is only on Azure Arc, right?
Yeah, Azure Stack Hub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of Azure Stack being picked up in your region?
I don't see a lot, no. So I think that's good that the hybrid story is there, because there has been a big demand, and I think that's one of the first things that was provided as feedback is what about the on-prem and hybrid solution. So I think that's a good thing that they announced that there is an option for hybrid. But personally, I don't see a lot of requests for such a setup. Most of these customers are either looking at also doing a DC migrate scenario, so they are migrating their application servers, backend servers towards these clouds as well, and also doing transformation in there, so not only lift and shift, but also, for example, if you have an on-prem SQL server, you can migrate to the SQL PaaS services, so not have to host a VM anymore. So they're also migrating their backend services as part of these migrations as well. There obviously will still be customers who, for some reason, need their data on-prem for legal reasons or for performance reasons. So yeah, I think it's good that there is a hybrid story. But I haven't seen a lot of requests in my customer space, at least.
So coming back to that application movement or potential database movement, what would you say is the biggest challenge with implementing Windows Virtual Desktops as it is today?
The biggest challenge is that I think that some customers don't realize that although a big part of the WVD service is now a platform as a service model, you still have to deal with the virtual machines, the session host virtual machines. So the EUC and the SBC knowledge that we've all been gathering over the years, that still applies. We still need to apply our login scripts or our group policies or our settings or deal with application landscapes and golden images. That doesn't change with WVD. So sometimes customers don't realize is that Yes, a big part is now a PaaS service, but there still are, well, the session host VMs that we need to manage them the way we've been doing that for, well, 20 years. The big step that is coming that was announced is that the Windows 10 multi-session will ultimately be joined to Azure AD, AD directly. So that means that you do not need a domain anymore. That also makes sense because now we can start to use Intune to manage both our local clients as well as the Windows 10 multi-session in WVD. That's a future step that was announced. But yeah, right now you still need some kind of Active Directory to join these VMs too. In most scenarios, that will probably be an Active Directory domain services because many customers already have ADDS running on-prem or in Azure. But you can also use the Platform as a Service model, so the DDDS, Azure AD Domain Services, which basically is a domain service but then hosted by Microsoft. But that's one of the future steps for WVD that I think that many customers are looking forward to have a single management task for both on-prem clients as well as the WVD hosts.
I guess that covers our next question on what can we expect the upcoming year with Windows Virtual Desktop.
Sorry to steal your thunder there.
No worries.
I think that's a fair point to make, that having simplified management across the board is a key feature to have, especially if you're doing on-premises resources with either physicals or virtual desktops, and have that same management plane extended into your PaaS service offering. So,
yep.
Yeah, definitely see a big advantage there.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. So, and more on the long term, how would you, maybe personally, how would you like to see WVD evolve in the long term? So maybe 3 years or something. Well, maybe we don't all have the luxury to look into the future for 3 years. But if it was, if you can daydream just for the next couple of minutes.
Let's put that question in perspective. If we would make you PM for WVD right now.
And we don't have the power.
No, we don't. Definitely don't have the power. No, that's definitely beyond my pay grade. But let's say if I could wave my magic wand and we could make you PM for Windows Virtual Desktop. And we ask you the same question. What would WVD look like in a year or maybe 2 years? What would be and obviously without breaching any NDAs,
be careful. Reprioritize everything on the roadmap. So.
Yeah. Let me try to.
It would be nice if.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
I would not be surprised if. No, I think that. The way they have been transforming from IaaS to PaaS, that is, I think, the biggest step they had to take. From here, it is all about extending the platform and adding new features and adding new capabilities. But I think that they still have a long way to go in terms of the full management of the entire stack. So if you take a look at, for example, the scaling of your session host servers itself, that isn't done by WVD. So you still need to do some kind of scripting or Azure automation to be able to scale that to your needs. Smaller things like the management console, although I'm a big fan of PowerShell, every system administrator that I run into at a customer, the first question he asks is, where is the UI?
Can I click it?
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
So that's something they are already working on. Looking forward to see that be integrated in the Azure portal itself. So there has been a preview UI available, and there have been other community efforts to create other GUIs and even Windows GUIs as well. But I think that having a full management capability directly from the Azure cloud, so from start to finish and not having to switch to PowerShell tasks or other management consoles, is going to be a big step, and including also the scaling of the session host servers. I think the Azure AD is a big part, but also a full single sign-on, which is not there in the product right now. There is some kind of, faking the single sign-on option by caching the credentials on your local machine. So for the end user, it still seems like a single sign-on. But that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to have a full single sign-on experience with Azure AD joint devices all being managed by Intune. I think that's going to be the next step this year.
So, and you mentioned thin clients, or as some call them today, software-defined endpoints.
Software-defined edge devices.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
That sounds really cool, yeah.
No, but how important is this for a successful implementation of an environment? Because you mentioned user experience, you mentioned endpoints. Is there a significant, important piece of the infrastructure that, you need to cover?
Yeah, I think that a great feature improvement, if you take a look at previous environments, is that the client itself to access WVD is now separate from the operating system. So before, if you're using RDS, you would use the MSDSC client, which means that the RDP experience and the RDP version was bound to the OS version. So if you were running Windows XP, hopefully you're not, but you get a horrible RDP experience. If you're running Windows 7, which is outdated as well since last week, you get maybe RDP 8. But for the full Windows 10 or full RDP 10 experience, you had to move to Windows 10. That all changed with the separation of the client itself. So the client is now separated from the OS, which means that they can also update that every week, every day, whatever they want. If they add new features, they can add that instantly. And every user on every Windows version, whatever version you're using, instantly gets that new RDP experience. I think that's a big step. And for other clients, yeah, there are iOS, macOS, Android clients available from the various app stores. And a big announcement has also been that iGEL is now the first Linux thin client provider, which allows you to run the WP client on top of Linux.
That would be my next question, because I know that a lot of these thin client vendors have Linux as their preferred operating system.
Yep.
Having that client available for Linux opens up a lot of potential thin clients to be used for this Windows virtual desktop service. So it kind of makes sense to have that up and going. We've been talking through the platform and extensions and all what. Can you tell us about your favorite Windows virtual desktop product feature and why it's your favorite feature?
Wow. Interesting question. Let me think about that and get back to you. So I actually have a question for you. So since you have been in the UC space, and you both have for many years, from your perspective, what are your thoughts on the WVD service itself and the way it was announced and positioned in the market?
So that's a really good question, and thank you for giving us a question back, because
Thank you for taking the question, guys.
So being in the UC space, most of my focus has been on Microsoft or on Citrix and VMware. And Microsoft has just been, collateral damage in terms of it's something that you need to set up these infrastructures. The push towards cloud from Citrix as of 2-3 years has been very interesting. So a lot of the customers I talk to are maybe not as ready to go to public cloud as these vendors want them to be, right? So they've got a ton of reasons why they want to keep everything on premises. Now, with Microsoft introducing Windows Virtual Desktop, there's another vendor saying, hey, maybe you should move to this new service because it's easier to consume and for all the obvious reasons you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be a balance, right? So there needs to be a balance to what's available on premises versus what's available in whatever cloud you're running into.
Right.
So for me, the way I look at it is that my customers or the customers I talk to probably don't want to move unless there's feature parity in that hybrid scenario. And that's the way I look at it as well. Why should I move my customers, or why should I advise customers to move to either on-prem or a cloud-based scenario if there's not a feature parity in those platforms? Because hybrid is the new future.
Agreed.
There is no cloud only or on-premises only. There will always be a little bit of a mix and a little bit of balance between those two. And you just need to have the same services offered across whatever platform. Making infrastructure invisible is one of the slogans of my employer. And that's a mantra I get and I follow. So it, as long as there's no like seamless experience across environments, either on-prem or cloud or maybe even Azure, AWS or GCP, I think people will resist against stepping into such a service.
Yeah, and maybe just to add to that, my personal opinion is always when new technology or new solutions are announced, there's always a lot of marketing attention, right? A lot of fuss around it and a lot of cloudy dusts. And I always wait.
Rainbows and
unicorns. All over the place. So, and we always wait, or at least I do. I always wait until the dust clears and then see what's still there. And I think you mentioned one important thing, right? And I think maybe a lot of people thought WVD is going to solve all our problems overnight, right? You swipe your credit card and the next day, all your users in your organization are happy and unicorns all over the place, right? So, but that's simply not true. And as you mentioned, all the knowledge that we have built up in the community and in the industry, that still applies to WVD. So you still need this, and that's why we, and especially you, can still add value. And it's not about us adding value, but it's just another set of tools in our toolbox to provide secure access to applications and data.
Yep.
But yeah, maybe that's just being Dutch and not really sugarcoating it. But
yeah, I agree that it's good that customers are aware of that. This is not an Office 365 that you pull out of a wall and it works and it's running. Right, you still need to do a lot of management because there are still and probably will always be Windows VMs that are hosting your sessions.
Well, and even for Office 365, it's not swiping your credit card and you're good to go. There are some steps to actually get it configured. I mean, there are people that do this for a daytime job.
Yeah, so I have those colleagues.
Let's not dismiss the work that they're doing.
No, I'm just saying that there's if you purchase such a cloud-ready product for Office 365, you don't have to run VMs and do group policy and stuff like that. So.
So, but to come back to Kay's original question, personal feature, or maybe we did the funny facts in the introduction, running your workloads out of Japan, working in a church while you're not traveling. So this is your escape. You can either answer Kay's initial question, or give the listener some background around those two personal funny facts. But yeah, we'll leave it to you.
I had some time to think about your question, which is the thing that I'm mostly looking forward to is not really related to WVD, but it's something called MSIX App Attach, which means that if you're dealing, what we talked about, application landscapes, you always have to deal with decisions like, am I going to create a single golden image with every application in it, or am I going to create multiple golden images, and how I'm going to update and manage these machines with all the third-party applications. MSIX App Attach is really going to change that. So you don't have to install applications on a golden image anymore, but you simply attach them at runtime even to the VM. So you can think of it as attaching user profile disks or FSLogix disk or any other vendor VMware who are doing this as well.
Citrix AppLearning, VMware AppVolume, just to mention a few.
They all do that for profile, but now Microsoft also is working on this, doing that for applications as well. So you can instantly add an application to a host without having to install it on golden images or create new images or do your whole application lifecycle management. So that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to seeing actually be added to the WVD service as a feature as well. So it would be really great if you were going to deploy WVD from, let's say, the marketplace, you would have the option to say, I want these applications, and yes, please make them MSIX aware, and just run them on my hosts. And then in the end, the session host or the Windows 10 multi-session will be just an operating system with no applications on it, with no user profiles on it, because everything is going to be attached on the fly. I think that's a good goal to work towards.
That's a ton of discussions to be had with application vendors,
sure.
Though.
Yeah, sure. So I'm not saying that every application is going to support this, but if you take a look at the future of application development in general, hopefully applications are vendors are moving from an MSI approach towards MSIX, not only for WVD or end-user computing specific, but also for local machines. So hopefully that is the future. It's going to save off a lot of effort to get all of those applications working. Yeah.
So do you want to take Jitsa's question as well about running your workloads in Japan and spending your days in the church?
Sure. So which one first?
Right, that's up to you.
So the Japan story was funny. So I attended the MS Ignite conference, which was last November. And well, obviously, there were a lot of announcements, but one of the announcements was that new regions were going to be added to the WVD service. So although WVD went into general availability in September, end of September, beginning of October, and the message was WVD is now available worldwide, there was a marketing term, right? So yes, I could go anywhere in the world and access the WVD service. But depending on where I was at the moment, I would connect from an Australian city back to the West Europe data center. Because at the time of GA, only the US and West Europe were added to, were equipped with the WVD service in Azure. So they announced new regions at the Ignite conference. So I think Brazil, India, Japan, and one other were announced to be available. So I was waiting for my plane, going back to the Netherlands, and I had some Wi-Fi on the way back as well. And I said, well, let's see if I can access this Japan data center. So I managed to set up a VM running in the Japan region, installed the WVD agent or the client in there, and was able to contact the WVD service back to the Japan data center. So, yeah.
Just because you can.
Just because I can. Yeah.
All right. And the second one?
The church. Yeah.
The church. Yeah. So hopefully people didn't get the weird or strange ideas what I'm doing inside the church. But the answer is that I work for Wortel. Wortel is a system integrator, as I said. And their primary office is actually built into a Catholic church. So from the outside, it still seems like a church with all of the details still in place. But from the inside, it's a modern office with flexible workplaces, etc. But some of the inside is still there, like the windows and like some of the statues are still there. Our lunch table is sort of the altar, as I'd say. It's a fun place to be in. It's inspiring a building. So that's the reason why I spend a lot of days inside a church. Yeah.
As you said, an inspiring environment. So on that personal note, away from your day job, what is top of mind besides your work and why? PowerShell, but that's still your work.
Wow. You mean outside of technology?
There's more work.
A lot of us, work is more or less a hobby as well for most of us. But
it is, yeah. So I did actually do a study in computer science. So, but I used to be, I'm coming from a programmer background, so...
Hence the PowerShell.
Yeah, hence the PowerShell.
All of us are nodding again.
So, that's something that I enjoy doing, even as, like you said, a hobby or in free time. I just create automation scripts and do programming. I still do that as a hobby.
Whatever, home automation or... not even that. No.
Not so much. No, as long as it's Azure and it's PowerShell, I enjoy doing it. So
Azure IoT, maybe.
maybe. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for coming to the show, Freek. If you have anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, please reach out to us on the social channels or by email. podcast@eucdigest.com. Cheers, love, and course.
This podcast is brought to you by iGel. iGel offers the next generation Edge operating system designed for simple, secure, and high performance access to virtual desktops and cloud workspaces. easy to implement, and straightforward to operate.